everyone. I'm Larry Cohen. I'm actually replacing my colleague Rachel Davis, but she is here if there are any hard questions. And I wanted to talk to you about some work we've been doing with funding and support and really in partnership with the California Endowment in California called Good Health Counts, which is about looking at community indicator reports as tools for change. And the document's really about two things, and so I wanted to take a minute to talk about them. The first is about health, and the second is about indicator reports as a tool, which I think in some ways may be useful in terms of some of the work you described in Boston. Because I want to go back to the word health and remind us that often when we hear the word health, what comes to mind is health care. And a lot of our emphasis is on the mix of good health care and what it takes in the first place so that people don't get sick or injured. And what Good Health Count focuses on is the community environment and both what needs to be available in terms of health care, but also what needs to be available in terms of just general community health. So I thought I would start, particularly after lunch, which is kind of a slow time, with three pictures from my favorite game, What's Wrong With This Picture, that I think will remind us that the environment really is important. And really the notion that when we think about the environment, I think we understand the link between the environment and health when we think about toxins, air, water, and soil. But there's also a link between the environment and behavior, and whether a behavior is the easier behavior or the harder behavior, and the link between those behaviors and health as well. And that link between environment and behavior often plays out as norms. And there's a lot to say about norms, which I won't say today, but I'd love to talk with you about if you have any interest in that. So this is the toxics picture taken near my home in Richmond, California. And I think I could ask you what's wrong with this picture. But also, as you look at it, I imagine there are some community health, some health issues that come to mind, some medical issues that you could see emerging from people looking at this picture. This is another one. Anyone here who can translate this? Basically, it's to see it or to see her is to want it, or perhaps to want her. And the question is what the it is. And I think you can also think of a number of health outcomes, negative health outcomes, that come from billboards and ads like this in our communities. And finally, let me share this one, taken by a colleague in Tennessee. Again, I think you can see a number of health outcomes, and actually we could probably imprint these health outcomes on a number of the issues that you showed in terms of the Boston community, from asthma to overweight issues and the diabetes issues that people mentioned and the injury issues and so forth. So I think we're seeing those community factors. And so Good Health Counts, as I say, really talks about how do we think about those factors and how do we kind of understand indicators. And we built on work on health disparities because equity is a very important part of our work, though the same issues apply in every community. And in low-income communities and communities of color, I think the difference is it's more so. It's not very different. But basically the notion is we start with root factors. We start with community issues. We start in the case of disparities with oppression, with racism, with economic disparities. And those factors, that root translates into an environment and leads to some very, very specific conditions in the environment. And as I said, those issues in the environment, as we can see in some of the earlier pictures, really shape behavior and then lead to medical services. And the disparities every step along that trajectory tend to grow. But in our work on health disparities, most of the time when you say reduce health disparities, we only focus on the medical services. Well, we think that the environment is a key opportunity for prevention, not only because it has an impact on the behaviors and reduces the medical services, but also changing the environment starts to change some of the underlying root factors as well. And the medical factors are incredibly well documented in the book unequal treatment, which not only produced by Institute of Medicine, not only describes what's wrong with the medical system, but really gives a number of the strategies to start to make changes. I was privileged to finally yesterday meet Brian Smedley, the lead author of the report, and we talked about ways to meld unequal treatment and some of the primary prevention work in ways that I think we're very excited about, and let me come to that in a minute. Because I think the notion is we can look at these medical conditions and take a step back, and we can say what underlies them. And if we say, as we did early in my career, what do we do about cancer, and we were talking about research and we were talking about treatment, and I was involved in the first multi-city no smoking laws, and when we talked about tobacco, the kinds of strategies that we were developing were very different than when we called it cancer. So this notion of taking a step back, I think, can be very, very helpful. And as the Institute of Medicine put it, it's unreasonable to expect that people will change their behavior easily when so many forces in the social, cultural, and physical environment conspire against such change. So to me, what that means is we need to take a second step back. Fat for Life, 6 million kids are seriously overweight. What families can do. What families can do? How can we only ask about family behavior when it's 6 million kids and we're supersizing America? Oh, I missed this one. This is my favorite. This is a colleague's son being supersized as we speak. And so this notion then of, wait a minute, what is it about the community? What is it about norms? So that's the way we've been thinking in Good Health Counts. And when you look back at what's going on with the cancer, with the heart disease, we see these community conditions. We see this situation. And basically, we see what is sold and what is promoted. And we actually did research and we said, what are the factors that underlie the leading causes of death? What are the factors that underlie the behaviors associated with the leading causes of death? And one example, which fits in the place category, is what's sold and how is it promoted? And in our research, actually, we identified 13 factors, and we clustered those factors into the three categories of equitable opportunity, absolutely key, place factors, the seven factors there, and then the three people factors, social networks and trust, participation and willingness to act for the common good, and the norms factor of acceptable behaviors and attitudes. And so what it is then is it's this community environment, those 13 factors, plus medical services that together shape and contribute to community health. And so we have a list of five key community medical services that we added. I'd be very interesting to see how they map with some of the thinking that which I thought was enormously interesting and valuable, coming out of the Children's Hospital in Boston, which gives us the whole set of four types of factors, the equitable opportunity being fundamental, what the place is like, the people factors, and the medical services factors, and these factors together comprising community health. But the other piece of Good Health Counts then is, how do we put it into place? What does it look like? And so we looked at probably, I don't know, several hundred reports and report cards, not just health report cards, but communities service report cards, the whole variety that got at some of these factors. And we looked first at the purpose of reports and report cards, which varied from healthcare quality improvement to informing policy to getting media attention, to framing accountability, a very, very important thing to emphasize. And we looked at, you know, summarized our thinking, at least, of what we learned. You know, what's working, when is it working, how is it working. For example, we felt that reports needed to have meaningful language. And when we developed those 13 factors, we had a national panel review them and basically validate the 13 factors that we developed that were community factors. And then we pilot tested them in three communities. And one of the communities where we pilot tested this work was Hidalgo, New Mexico, a practically monolingual Latino community. And when we talked about the factors. We talked about meaningful language, and we talked about basically the norms factor, the acceptable behavior factor, and they said, ah, costumbres. We think costumbres, which of course is more or less Spanish for customs, you know, that's the way. And translating into meaningful language in different reports is absolutely critical. But equally critical is that the report carries the notion of a vision, that the report is about something important, that it's really getting to the notion of community health and the values that a community holds. We also looked at strengths and limitations of community indicator report cards. I'm not going into detail on any of this, obviously, because of time, but I just wanted to let you know that these elements are out there. And something that's intuitive is really, really valuable. Something that's attention-getting, really, really valuable. There are some risks and dangers, though. Sometimes, there's real challenges in establishing a baseline. Sometimes there's this risk of grade inflation. But the biggest risk, probably, is that somehow some of the reports and report cards, if they're not done carefully, can stigmatize communities where the community really needs support and really, really needs help. So there's other samples we looked at to try and understand what does business do, what does government do, what does media do, how do we get the word out. You know, the colleges battle to who's going to be listed as the top 10 colleges. And last year we were number 7, and this year we're number 9. And what do we have to do differently to get into the top 5? So there can really be a tremendous value, if we're careful and not stigmatizing, there can really be a tremendous value in reports and report cards. And we looked at model indicators finally, and we said, what are examples, what are indicators that different communities use? And I want to talk for a minute about the bottom one, salmon spawning, because that's probably the one that seems oddest to you. And people say, what on earth is that? But this was a great indicator that is actually in place in one of the best reports, in my opinion, in the country, which is in the city of Seattle. Because they say when the salmon is spawning, the water is pure. When the water is pure, it means the air is pure. And it, for them, was an indicator that was intuitive, that was appealing, that was attention-getting, and also that really accurately described a very, very important element of their environment. So there's a creativity factor, obviously, to this as well. A quote to summarize the report element of my presentation: good reports are inarguable. They are what they are. When the community has been involved in identifying the indicators and measures, the community can accept and argue about what they want to do about it, rather than arguing about the information in the report and not trusting and believing it. And I think that's a very essential element in terms of how to think about this. I know I covered this stuff very, very fast, but I really wanted to kind of give you the broad overview. We have a lot of tools and information on our website, particularly about primary prevention, what to do before people get sick or injured. Thrive is really about the community factors translated into, or really coming from, because we started first with the equity issue. So it lists these community factors and it describes them in a community-friendly way in relation to health disparities, and people can go on and can rate, can get case studies, can get a lot of information about these 13 factors. There's the journal piece, since I was honored to be called a scholar, though I'm not one of the authors of this particular article, Rachel is, from the CDC Preventing Chronic Disease Manual. But I am one of the authors of this, and I really, we've really been trying to talk about this here. It's called Prevention is Primary. It's the first textbook in probably 30 or 40 years that emphasizes primary prevention as a focal point, not one particular topic, one particular issue. We get virtually nothing when it sells, but it was a huge labor of love to produce it. We need to get the word out, and I think you're the kind of people who can really help us, because the next generation really must get prevention. We really need to educate a new generation of leaders. Also, in terms of issues like nutrition and activity, we have a local policy database. Our work is really translating research to practice. How do we catalog these issues? The spectrum prevention is a tool we developed on comprehensive work in prevention. We do a lot of work on coalition building, including collaboration math, on interdisciplinary coalitions. We deal with TERF, there's our website. Please give me a card if you've got one. We'd be happy to put you on our database. I know I covered a lot of stuff fast, but it's a different way of thinking. So thank you all very much.